Okay, we're doing a special work called Avat Yisrael. The Chafetz Chaim wrote this work about baseless hatred. I'm not sure at what stage in his life he wrote it. Before the Chafetz Chaim, before the Shmirat HaLashon, after Mishnah Berura. I don't know. I don't know of an indication to the order in which he wrote his books. But let's begin. The name of the book is Avat Yisrael, The Love of Israel. Chapter 1, Bo Yivuar Godel Le'avon Shesinat Chinam Uvo Chamisha Prakim. Where chapter 1 has 5 segments about the severity of the sin of baseless hatred. Ketvua poskin, the poskim, the halachic authorities write, alav de lo tisnat achicha bilvavecha, pertaining to the prohibition of hating our brother in our heart. Ze leshonam, here's what it says, mitzvat lo taseh shlo lisno balev, we have a prohibition to hate in our heart. Adam kasher mi Israel, a kosher Jew from Israel. Shenemar, the verse says, lo tisnat achicha bilvavecha, do not hate your brother in your heart. So if you have someone you know, he's a kosher Jew, so there's this biblical prohibition to hate him. Now the Torah here warned us about hatred in the heart. Meaning, we're not talking about being active, we're talking about what we might call passive feelings. Maybe it's active in the heart, but it's passive in the realm of what you see. You didn't do anything, right? What happens if you smack your friend, and curse him out? Then you didn't transgress this prohibition, right? Because it's on your heart, right? There are other prohibitions. Okay, we're going to see it's not so simple, but if someone does something improper, a person shouldn't keep it in his heart, be silent and maintain an enmity. There's a mitzvah to tell him. Tell him gently, why'd you do to me such and such? Now that's very important. Sometimes there are tremendous misunderstandings. I told you guys the story that happened shortly after we were engaged, my wife and I. There was a big rabbi who we asked some of our questions to. And out of humility, he would always call and introduce himself as Avi. He never said Rabbi so-and-so. He said, my name is Avi. So we're engaged. And about 3-4 days after the engagement, I get a text message from my wife, a fiancé at the time. Avi called and said that he needs to speak to you in Hebrew. Avi itkasher v'amar shehu tzrich ledaber itcha. And I'm looking at the text message and I'm thinking, I mentioned to her he finishes Shas more than once a year. She knows that he's a big rabbi. Why is she calling him by his first name? I couldn't figure out what I'm supposed to make of this. And guess what? I was the dunce. It was her father. Avi, my father, called. Avi itkasher. My father called. It wasn't this rabbi. So sometimes you ask someone why, and suddenly you realize it's not what you thought it was, right? So there are such misunderstandings in life. And I'll tell you a story that happened to me last week, 2 weeks ago. I have a neighbor who arranges learning for the youth of the yeshuv. So Friday night, he arranged singing and learning, and it was across the street from our house. And until about midnight, you heard the most beautiful singing outside. And I told my wife, I wish I would have known. I would have kept the kids up. It's something worthwhile for them to see how beautiful a Friday night can look. And then I met him on the street Shabbos morning, and I said to him, your singing was Meir, which I meant gave off light. And he thought I was saying it with an ayin, Meir, it woke us. And so I told him, you know, hey, it was inspiring. And he thought I was saying it was waking everyone. And he was standing with other people, so he starts becoming all apologetic. And he says, you know, next time we'll think about it more. We really didn't. And I said, well, are you kidding? I would have brought my kids. I didn't even know. And I couldn't understand where the misunderstanding lied until he went his way. I went my way. The crowd dispersed. And then it struck me. I ran back at him. Why? Because he's Sfardi, I'm Ashkenazi. So I don't make my ayins like an ayin. So when I say Meir, you know, I didn't notice that to him. It sounds like I'm saying the same thing. Okay. Now, imagine he would walk away from that conversation thinking, why do you have to tell me that in front of everyone? And here, I meant to compliment him in front of everyone. Okay, sometimes they're misunderstandings. Ask the person.
You'll find everything. Speaking of misunderstandings, what does he mean by a kosher Jew?
Oh, he'll get there. Okay. Let's hear him out. So, he says, first thing is ask the person, why did you do it? V'imcheh davar min libo. You have to be willing to erase it from your heart. This prohibition is relevant at every time, at every place. Here, until here was a quote. Oh, next question. Who's considered your brethren? Kol Adam Yisrael. Every Jew. Kedite, as the Mishnah says in the Brice and Avos Rabbi Nosson, Al tomar laze Yisrael ani ohev velaze ani sone. Don't say, this Jew I love, that Jew I hate. No. Le'ehov tachachamim, don't say, oh, I love the people who know Torah, they learn. Ve'lishnota me'aretz, I hate the people who, they don't know anything. Ela'ehov et kulam, rather, our responsibility is to love everyone. Usnata minim, you know who you should hate? You should hate a missionary. You should hate someone who's trying to mislead other people. Ve'chen David umer, and that's what King David said, halom sanecha shem isna, it says, those who hate God, that's who I hate, says David HaMelech. Umin nikra, okay, what's called a min? Hakofer b'torat Hashem uvashgachato. One who is an apostate, he denies the Torah, he denies that God is involved in this world.
What about if that's another Jew?
That's fine, that's included. And if we look close and analyze what comes out of this bitter sin, nireh she'adam ממשיך על ידי אבון זה רוח טומאה על עצמו. We'll see that this sin actually envelops a person with a spirit of defilement. We know that any limb we perform a mitzvah with has a holy aura on it. And by performing all the mitzvot, so then the whole body gets sanctified, as the verse says. Hashem says, you will perform all my mitzvot, and then you'll be holy people. And the inverse is true when one sins. So then the limb that was used for sinning gets a defiled spirit on it. Ukmo shamu chazal, as our sages taught, al yashmeos adam neos no dvarim betelim, neshem nechvim tchila leivarim. Don't let your ears hear things that are really pointless, because the ears are the first limbs to get scorched in perdition. Shekavanatam, what our sages indicated is, al yedei shmiato dvarim asurim, when one listens to prohibited things, mamshich al osnav roach tuma, so then he pulls down on his ears a defiled spirit, vatidim liot nechvim tchila leivarim. So they will get burnt first. So the same is true with regards to any limb. If you do any sin with that limb, so then there's a defiled spirit on that limb. He says, here's not really the place to expand on this. In truth, you can find this with regard to every limb. So his next point, I'll summarize for lack of time. He says, this is true about regular limbs. But think about it. What about a limb that your whole life is contingent on? Like the heart. Your life is contingent on the heart. So if we know if a person is missing a heart, he's dead. So this sin of baseless hatred in the heart, which is really contingent on the heart, so that brings a defiled spirit to the heart. And being that the heart is where what gives sustenance to all of life, so then that obviously affects all of life. It's
why does it talk about these analogies and metaphors of physical limbs, since in the next world you don't have physicality?
That's an excellent question. Not even for Thursday night. Okay. In 15 years, you'll tell me.
Thank you for granting me long life.
I meant you should live much longer than that.
No, 15 years, I still got sake. I won't say that in 14 years. I'll say that in a little bit.
Okay, so aside from the spiritual punishment that a person gets, there are also punishments in this world. Our sages say, "Ba'avon sinat chinam." because of a baseless hatred, meriva rabba betoch beito shel adam. A person should realize that in his house there are going to be a lot of fights. Ve'ishtom apelet nefalim, and his wife will miscarry. Uvanav uvnotav metim shem tanim, and a person will lose his children, they will die as children. So that's a Gemara. The Gemara says, you want to know what baseless hatred brings? It destroys one's own home. Look at how Chazal warned us how a person hurts himself with this bitter sin. So Bini wants to know, how could you sin and hurt? Yeah, that's your question. What's your question?
My question was a little bit before that. I was still trying to formulate it. Whenever people say things like, you keep the hatred in your heart, and it's talking about, the heart as something that carries emotion, I always take it as to be, kind of representative of something else. But then you said if you do that, then B will happen, and B is a repercussion of the physical heart.
Right.
So I must have had a wrong presumption on thing A.
You want me to answer Mr. Fleisch's question, huh? No, but the answer is the same.
Okay.
Just because I could say it doesn't mean I know it. What's the time?
24:25.
So we're not going to finish this book today. Okay, so we might as well take the time to address this.
How long are we going for?
45, 20 more minutes.
Then I.
No, you want to continue in the next class? We could do that at 8:30, but at 3:45, that's when we got it. Whoever wants to go to the mass prayer, that's when they're starting.
Oh, that's what we're calling it.
We're going to mass.
That's what it is.
Yeah. It's not a protest.
Have you ever had heartache?
Not heartache.
Right. When I was your age, I didn't either. It's interesting because you learn Tanakh and you learn our sages, and they speak about heartache. And up until about 6-7 years ago, I never had heartache either. I shouldn't say that. A little longer than that. You will see, because it's a part of life, that there are things that cause your heart to ache. It's not only in a spiritual sense, it's in a physical sense too. It happens. So,
this is not like a depression.
No, I'm saying depression is a nice example of it, but I'm saying it's relevant to many things. A person does sense with his heart. It's not only your mind that senses. Your heart also reacts, and there are certain emotions that affect your heart, and there are certain emotions that affect your mind. I'll tell you something, but don't take it the wrong way. Until I met my wife, I don't think I ever had heartache. I said not to take it the wrong way. No, I'll explain to you what I mean. The relationships you have with friends, with parents, with siblings are on one level. And then you meet someone and you want to build a life together, and it's a totally different level of relationship. When we were 3 days before engagement, we were once at a bus stop, and she had to get on a bus, and she said a half a sentence to me as she got on the bus, and her cell phone had just died, and I misunderstood what she said, and I couldn't call her, and I walked away thinking she said we should break up, and I thought we were getting engaged in 2 days, and I had no way of contacting her for another until she got home that night. Cell phone was dead. She was going off to her studies. Then I learned what heartache is, okay? I'm saying that's what I meant. You're going to take it the wrong way. But I'm saying there are emotions that as you develop different relationships, you start sensing them. So firstly, when he speaks about the heart, we have to understand that, yes, he's talking about the heart. Secondly, so a few years ago, we learned, must have been Tomer Dvora, I think it was Tomer Dvora. And in the back of the printing of Tomer Dvora was a book, I forget the name, by Rav Chaim Vital. And that book describes the correspondences of limbs to their spiritual counterparts. Now, I don't know anything about these things. So when we finished Tomer Dvora, the guy said, let's go on to the next book that's here. We have the book. Anyways, let's go on. So I said, fine. I read the first chapter with them, did the best to eke out some kind of translation. And I kept saying, you know, I'm not sure what I'm reading here. And basically, the first few chapters, I kept thinking it'll get out of Kabbalistic things and into things that we understand. Eventually, I realized that wasn't going to happen, that the whole book was Kabbalah, and we stopped. But that's where I started reading with the guys in class. We did this 2 or 3 years ago. And he discusses this idea that there's a spiritual correspondence for every limb that we have physically down below. That's a little bit of the answer to both of your questions. Now, there is a spiritual correspondence. We say, just like you have a physical arm down below, so there's, let's imagine, a spiritual arm that's being built. Just like we say there's a temple down below, there's a spiritual correspondence to it, or what you might call a metaphysical correspondence.
What happens when the temple is destroyed?
That's an excellent question. That's you don't have to go as far as that book.
What happens when people die?
Okay. So we might say there's a potential that's waiting to be realized down below. Just like we say there's a potential in heaven for every soul that's waiting for a body. Right? So there you go. The souls were created from the 6 days of creation. It's just the bodies you're looking for. Okay, coming back to here. You guys asked. So like I said, Akiva, I could say the words. That doesn't mean I understand the concepts, but that's more or less the direction it seems. Later on, or in his other works, the Chafetz Chaim references that book. You see that he's referring to that. But, okay, I don't remember the name. Back to our... back to the Avat Yisrael. V'ineilu yifka adam echad bivno akatan lakoto. If you see someone coming and giving your son a smack... Your little three-year-old. You're going to get out there. You're going to fight with him. You'll hate him to the death. But if a person himself is doing something that can cause his own kid's death, suddenly that doesn't concern him. You know, I'll tell you a funny story. We had relatives. We were visiting, and they had they have these little plastic containers that have basically it's sugar with food coloring and who knows how many preservatives.
Kool-Aid.
It's like Kool-Aid, right, exactly. It's like Kool-Aid. So they give them to the kids. So our kids came, they saw it, and they said, "Cool, can we have one of those?" And when my wife and I were there, so they said, "No, this is poison." And they put it away. And then my wife and I left, and we left the kids there. One of the little ones went to the mother and said, "Could I have some poison?" So coming back, they didn't understand the English. So coming back to our Chafetz Chaim, he's saying, "Would you give your kids poison?" You wouldn't, right? So, and if anyone else did anything that was slightly harmful, then you'd get really upset. So how come we're allowing ourselves to do something which our sages say that's poisonous to our one's own family? A person doesn't even think about how far his sin reaches. And this is something which you guys have for sure witnessed. The same guy who's antsy and fighting with everyone in shul, how does he talk to his wife and kids? It doesn't end in shul. When a person is the type of person who has sinat chinam, he has baseless hatred, so then the iriyah are a bunch of crooks, they're taking our money for nothing, and the shul doesn't know how to manage their money, and they're taking our money for nothing, and then when he comes home, the kids are irresponsible, and the wife is irresponsible, and everyone's bad. It doesn't stop when you enter your home. So this idea that sinat chinam affects the home, you could look at it from a practical perspective. It's an attitude. The Gemara is talking from a spiritual perspective, what the sin does in the home. But we have to look at it from a practical perspective. you know, one of the kids got really upset. And they sat there crying and saying, I hate my teacher. Well, I like that one, but I hate the one who teaches me this. And I hate the bus we take in the morning. And they're ranting for like 5 minutes telling me all the things they hate. So first I'm holding and kissing the child. And when they start calming down, I said, you know, they stopped crying. And then they said, but I still hate. And then they go through the whole list all over again. And I said, you know, you got to think about it. Because if you're busy hating, then you'll continue to be busy hating. It doesn't end. If you choose to hate, then you will continue to hate. Then there'll always be things to hate. You have to decide what you want to do with your life. And no one can stop you. You'll always have what to hate. So the child says to me, but I do hate my bed and I do hate my room. And I said, I want to remind you that when we moved into this house, you were the first child to choose which room you got. And you were the first one I let you choose which bed you got. Because you said that you never get to choose. So I asked you before I asked any other kid, and you got what you wanted. And then you came to me 2 weeks later and said, I hate my bed. And we arranged to switch your bed. And now you're coming to me and telling me you still hate it. So let's stop and look at what's going on here. It's not that there's an issue with the bed or the room or something else. It's that you've decided to hate. And if you've decided to hate, there'll always be things to hate. And it's interesting to see that even a small child can understand this. We also have to understand this. Sinat chinam is an attitude. And today I'm hating this guy because he doesn't do what I think is right for this. And tomorrow I'm hating the next guy. And it doesn't stop. It keeps going. It's one of the things you guys can pick up on when you're dating. Talk to the girl. Ask her about her mother, her father, her siblings, the school she grew up in, her teachers, and what she's doing now. And you will notice that most people have a pretty consistent story. Most people can tell you, I had a very bitter childhood, I had lousy teachers, I was in a lousy elementary school, and then I went on into... And if they view life that way, then they're going to tell you a lot of problems. And if they can be positive, then they're going to tell you a lot of positive. And neither one is lying. The one who's telling you everything was lousy is telling the truth. And the one who's telling you everything was good is telling you the truth. Because it's all a question of perspective. Sinat chinam is entering, we enter a realm where we allow ourselves to hate. You allow yourself to hate? Okay. The Gemara warns you where that will lead to. Oilo ve'oy l'nafsho. The Chafetz Chaim says, woe to the person, woe to his soul. Where's his intellect? Where's his brain? He's causing all this to himself. Therefore, says the Chafetz Chaim, we have to be so careful with this sin. A person has to invest his soul, all his spirit, to distance himself from this sin. And it will be good for him in this world and the world to come. And I want to conclude with a quote from Rav Kook Zatzal, a quote that I never liked, but in this context, it's worth quoting. Rav Kook used to say, "Mutav shenite ba'avat chinam, mishenite b'sinat chinam." Better we should sin, we should err in loving too much than in hating too much. And I used to be in a dorm room where the guy opposite me had this sign on his door, and it always ticked me off. And finally I had it, so I taped a note of my own under it, and I wrote, "V'mutav yoter shelo nite." And better ideas, don't make mistakes. You don't have to love too much, you don't have to hate too much. Get it right. That's why I say I don't like the quote from Rav Kook, because on the one hand, better off, don't make mistakes. What does that mean? You end up loving too much, and that could be fatal too. You have to know what you're doing. There are times where the Torah says, no, you see, Shaul thought he's going to love too much, and he brought the destruction, the whole story of Purim. The people were almost annihilated because he decided he wants to love more than the Torah says. So that's why it's a dangerous quote. The flip side of it is that what Rav Kook was saying is so relevant to us today, because you have so many scenarios where you hear people speaking, and people who theoretically represent Torah, and then they tell you, yeah, but that one you got to hate. And you say, wait a second, but there's another rabbi who says they're okay. And you look around, and unfortunately, especially when you're starting out, it could be a little bit confusing. What are you supposed to do here? What's the message? So that's why I think that quote is relevant, even though I think the ideal is to get it right. But in a world that's very confusing and people are pointing fingers in the name of God, you know, when the Hasidim and Misnagdim were fighting, I'm sorry to tell you, they were putting rusty nails in one another's mikveh. Hey, that's pretty harsh. Rusty nails. That's pretty terrible, right? Okay, so then all in the name of God. So there are times when you look at things and you say, it's pretty confusing. Who am I supposed to love and hate? So that's where I say, okay, that's where you got to pull out that quote from Rav Kook out of your pocket and say, okay, if I'm going to have to fall, let me fall for loving too much, not for hating too much.
Yeah, okay.